Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It's a great pleasure to welcome Luis Elizondo, the author of the new book, Inside the Pentagon's Hunt for UFOs. It is entitled Imminent. This is a man who was the head of the Department of Defense's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. As we will learn in our conversation with Lou, the Pentagon loves acronyms. That's it spelled out. Lou, congratulations. A very good evening to you. I take you to a moment that you record in your new book that was a challenge. You were stepping into a new world, out of the Army that you'd served and the Defense Department that you'd served. You wrote a resignation letter, October 2017, to General Mattis, who was then, at that point, the Secretary of Defense. And in the body of the letter, very carefully argued, the department must take serious the many accounts by the Navy and other services of unusual aerial systems interfering with military weapon platforms and displaying beyond next generational capabilities. What was that, Lou? And why did you resign with that in your letter? Good evening to you.
Good evening. And Mr. Batchelor, thank you so much to you and your wonderful audience for having me on your show this evening. It is a true pleasure to be here with you. I think it's important to understand that in order to understand why I wrote what I wrote, it's also important to understand where I came from. My father was in the Bay of Pigs invasion in the Brigade 2506. He was a prisoner, political prisoner of Castro. And we came to this country, my family, in exile, as a result of that. And so this country, at a very early age, my father taught me that this is the only country in the world that would or could give us the opportunities that we have. And so I've always been very, very loyal to this country. I joined the Army immediately after college. And then after there, I became a counterintelligence special agent. And serving my nation has always been a privilege for me and a great honor. And so early on in my career, I had the opportunity to serve with Jim Mattis when he was a general of the Marine Expeditionary Unit, the first unit really into Afghanistan, into Kandahar, Afghanistan. And the organization I was with, the task force, was directly supporting his efforts on the ground. And so I learned firsthand working with General Mattis personally, the incredible amount of character this gentleman has, also the enormous amount of intellect. And I respected him tremendously, not just as a military leader, but also as a human being, an extremely, extremely learned man. And the one thing I learned during my time working with him and then later again in the Middle East was that General Mattis was somebody who wanted more information, not less. He was a man who wanted all the data so he could make an informed decision. So later on in my career, when he became the Secretary of Defense, long story short, and I had a new position there at the Pentagon, our paths crossed again. And I was working a program with other colleagues of mine called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. And yes, you are correct. We love our acronyms in the Department of Defense. In essence, it was a UFO program in the vernacular. We were using taxpayer money to study UFOs. And it seems a little bit of a contradiction because the Pentagon, on one hand, didn't want to hear about it and wasn't taking it seriously. And yet, on the other hand, we were being paid and given resources to take the threat seriously because we had near-air collisions. And there was a lot of interesting data that we were gleaning from these technologies that were basically flying unimpeded, over-controlled U.S. airspace, over-sensitive military installations. And there was very little that we could do about it. And so ultimately, I wrote a letter to the Secretary of Defense after months and months and months trying to get the chain of command to take this topic seriously. And I resigned. What you're referring to is my resignation letter to the Secretary of Defense. basically telling him for the record, look, we've got a problem, and you're going to want to be briefed on this, because right now there's so much associated stigma and taboo surrounding this topic, even though that the government does take it seriously and has historically taken it seriously, that for whatever reason, the bureaucracy inside the Pentagon doesn't want you to know about it. And I saw that as a dereliction of duty. I saw that as a failure of the bureaucracy itself. And that is what you are referring to in my resignation memo, is basically an appeal, a last ditch appeal before I left the Pentagon, and telling him, look, sir, this is real. You have people and resources being used to look at this issue, and you're not aware of it.
As evidence of what Lou says, that letter did not reach General Mattis. He never saw it before Lou was out of the building. We go now to a day in 2008. You're in a building in Arlington, Virginia, rented by the Pentagon. Your job is counterintelligence. A knock at the door. Your assistant says there are people here to see you. One of them is a pseudonym, Rosemary Cain. The other is Jay Stratton. They introduce you, a counterintelligence officer, a combat veteran. They introduce you to something that at that time is called the Advanced Aerospace Weapons System Application Program. Ask you if you're interested before they tell you what it is, before they read you in your vernacular, Lou. I'm picking it up as I read your book. What was that at the time? What did you make of it? Why did you go with them, Lou?
Sure. Well, it was actually in 2000. So I came back to the Pentagon after serving a tour over at the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI. And so I came back in 2008. It was actually early 2009 when that conversation began. And it's not unusual when you are in certain positions in intelligence that other organizations will try to leverage some of the talent within other organizations. In my particular case, I was a senior counterintelligence officer. And from my understanding at the time, they needed somebody to run counterintelligence and security for this new, quote unquote, effort. They wouldn't tell me what it was. They didn't tell me anything about it. And it was, honestly, it was a little mysterious, but not really that uncommon, because until you get, as you say, read onto a program, there's very little you can talk about. So the very first few meetings is more of an assessment, getting to know one another. Are you going to be a good fit? And then ultimately they asked me to meet their boss. And that's really when I learned firsthand what they were focusing on. And so several weeks went by and I went to an undisclosed location in the DC area. It was a covered U.S. facility, meaning it was a secret U.S. facility. It was a normal building, but inside was doing secret stuff. And I met the director at the time of OSAP, and his name was Dr. Jim Lekatsky. He was, I would submit to you, probably the world's premier rocket scientist. And I mean it literally, rocket scientist. This is a person that could explain to you the burn rate of a first stage solid rocket motor booster, the reentry trajectory of a multiple reentry vehicle nuclear warhead. I mean, this was the best of the best. And after a conversation with him in his office, I remember him looking at me over his glasses and looked at me dead in the eyes, and he said, "Can I ask you a question?" I said, "Yes, sir. Sure, you can ask me anything you want." He said, "What do you think about UFOs?" And so I thought for a moment, and I responded truthfully. I said, "Sir, I don't." And he said, "You don't what? You don't believe in them?" And I said, "No, I didn't say that, sir. What I said is I don't think about them. You asked me if I thought about them, and I don't. I don't really have the luxury to. I've never been really prone to science fiction as a kid. I've been too busy, frankly, serving my country and doing other things." And he said, "That's fair, but let me just warn you, let me give you a piece of advice, Lou. Don't let your analytic bias get the best of you, because you may basically come into access to information that may really challenge your understanding and any current narrative you may have on the topic." And I found that very interesting. And from there, it was a very quick indoctrination into the understanding that, yes, our government was actually involved in studying UFOs. Again, in the vernacular, we call them now UAPs, and that these things were real. And not only that, but they presented an air flight safety issue, that we had been looking at these things for a very long time, that the government took this very seriously, especially the potential capability for UFOs to interfere with our nuclear strike capability. So that was very concerning from a national security perspective. And yet, this entire endeavor was being done sub rosa. We were being given taxpayer money to do it. We had support from leadership. We just weren't allowed to talk about it. And therein lies part of the challenge that we faced in the program.
I'm speaking to Luis Elizondo. Lou, the book is imminent, Inside the Pentagon's Hunt for UFOs. This is the former head of the Department of Defense's AATIP. We're turning now to what it is that they were looking at, the record they were looking at, and what that means to clash with the assumptions that if you are chasing UFOs, you don't work here. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.